Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HR Latte, your first cup of talent management whipped to perfection.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to HR Latte. I'm hoping the sound is okay today. I've had trouble with Wi-Fi. But I'm very excited to dive right in and have a great conversation to wrap up my series this month, which is Positivity at Work. So I'm hoping that we will have this great conversation. Please welcome my guest, Kelly. Hey, Kelly, thanks for joining me today.
Hey, I'm so happy to be with you. This is fun.
Well, we're going to have a great time, and hopefully we'll be able to hustle right through this. I'm trying to make this the best series that I've done thus far. So before we get into anything else, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Well, my name is Kelly Orchard, like the fruit trees. And I do, I'm a serial entrepreneur, I guess, and I do a lot of different projects. I have a 35-year background in broadcast radio. And so I do some consulting for radio, and I've recently, just in the past 6 months or so, began recruiting for radio stations for, you know, kind of like in the management back end, sales, general sales managers, things like that, those kinds of positions. I also do FCC compliance for radio and television station as a consultant. And then I'm also a licensed marriage and family therapist. So I'm very, very passionate about psychology in the workplace. And I have successfully combined my two careers, and that's kind of where I'm at right now. I do coaching, I do consulting, and I do recruiting.
Sounds like the perfect blend of everything that you've been doing for the last several years. So tell us about what you do to create personal positivity for yourself.
Well, you know what? I'm hungry for personal growth. I teach that to my clients, both in psychotherapy and when I'm, you know, when I'm recruiting or when I'm talking to other individuals about what's going on at work. So I practice what I preach. And so I'm always constantly reading, learning. I subscribe to different kinds of blogs and articles. I'm a student of my own experience because to me growth equals, you know, evolving, and that's, you know, that's how I create personal positivity. I also practice gratitude. I know it seems, you know, it's like, oh, it's, you know, that's for hippies, or, you know, it's like positivity, right? But, you know, scientifically, it's been proven now that positive thinking changes the brain chemistry. You can Google like Dr. Daniel Amen or any kind of psychotherapy practices now, and they find that it changes the serotonin levels and the endorphins in your brain chemistry. And so the more you think positive, the more your brain wants it. It's like a feel-good drug. And so that's what I do. I practice positive thinking, and I do that by a gratitude journal. Like for every day, I just look for some things to be grateful for, no matter how small or insignificant it might seem. It helps to change the brain chemistry. And so I'm constantly looking for things to be grateful for, practicing gratitude, a little kindness. It seems a little, I don't know, hippy-dippy, but it's actually having a physical change in my brain chemistry, and I promote that all the time. Think positive.
Wow.
Gratitude.
That's great. Do you have trouble coming up with new things? Do you find yourself saying the same things over and over again? Or as you do this, do you start to discover new things to be grateful for?
Absolutely. And, you know, and that's a really good question, because that's part of the exercise, is that if you're constantly doing the same, you know, like being grateful for the same thing, I'm thankful for my kids, I'm thankful I have a job, I'm thankful for this or that, it becomes sort of like it's not going to make any changes. So, you know, sometimes it'll be like it's something as silly and as innocuous as, oh, look, there's a penny. Thank you for the penny, you know, that's on the ground. I'll walk outside and it's like, thank you for this new rosebud that's blooming on this rose bush. And so I have made it a practice to deliberately look for different things to be grateful for, no matter how small. Like, men really love the idea of, oh, hey, the price of gas went down a penny. I'm thankful for that. Or
yeah.
I made all the green lights on the way to work. I mean, it's like, yes, stupid, silly little things, look for different ones. Your brain starts to like that feel-good drug, and it looks for more and more and more. So the more you do it, it becomes a habit, and then you just keep doing it. So
I found the same practice when I write. The more that I write, the easier the words flow, the better my writing is. And if I take a week or so off, I can feel that pressure. And so I've tried to make it a habit to write 300 to 500 words a day so that I stay in that practice. It sounds like it works the same way with gratitude. So I have a gratitude journal that I keep that was actually started by my father. We found it after he passed away. I found it in his desk. And there were only a couple of things that I wanted. One of them was this journal that had maybe 10 entries is all, but also a blanket gone with the wind that I remember being on the shelf when I was a kid. So when I opened this journal and read through it, there were interesting things that he noted that I would have never thought that he was grateful for while he was alive. So it's nice to look back on that. And it doesn't matter how you do it. Should you handwrite it? Can it be something that you type in? How do you do yours?
I'm like you. I journal every day, and I'm still pen to paper kind of girl. That's me. But I always tell my clients and the people that I consult, it's like whatever form works for you. You know, some of them they're more inclined to put it on their smartphone in their notes, or they may be interested. You know, like typing it on their computer and keeping a document. It's really what works for you. And there's no like tried and true rule. However, there's another scientific phenomenon that shows that even just the physical act of taking your hand and writing up on a piece of paper has a therapeutic value to it. And so for me, it's always been pen to paper. But others can do it however they want to do it.
They can even record it. It was a transition for me to move from pen and paper to computer, and I remember writing essays that by hand first and then typing them off the handwritten, and it took me a while to say, you could actually type this once and not have to write it and then type it. So.
Oh my God, I'm still doing it old school, Rhea, and I still sit and write in my journal, and I can't help myself,
I should do that, because my handwriting has really deteriorated over the last several years. So you mentioned earlier about having this recruiting experience, building a positive workforce. How much does leadership have to do with that? And in addition to that question, when we consider talent acquisition, so the hiring of quality employees, how does that play into the acquiring of talent and then maintaining that talent? So ultimately, does positivity have an effect on talent management?
Oh, absolutely. I recently went to a seminar where they were talking, we're always talking about personality tests. And, after I finish interviewing somebody and then they're going to be in that hiring process, you hear the reports like, well, we're having them go through our personality test now, this and that. I'm like, okay, I got to switch it up. And while I'm doing talent acquisition, I'm going to do somewhat of a personality test in the interview process to see if they have these qualities that are necessary for the specific job. But when it comes to leadership, you have to be open to new experiences, and you have to practice perpetual personal growth. Because if the leader doesn't grow, nobody else in the company is going to grow. They're looking to that leadership for that, the growth of the company, for how everything's going to go. So it has to come from the top down. Your employees can be as positive as they can possibly be, but if the leader, the head guy is walking into the building and they've got this negative energy around them, guess what? All the positivity, is going to be out the window. So it definitely has to come from the leader. And yes, in talent acquisition, from my perspective, you've got to get people that are excited and passionate about the work that they're going to do, or they're going to be in the wrong place.
Right. And I just spoke with my brother about legacy. Dr. Andrew Thorne was on my show earlier this week, and we talked about thinking ahead. How can positivity and leadership create a greater legacy for the organization, for the individual that's managing, leading, guiding the organization, when we talk about vision for the future of the organization? So when you think about it, Kelly, what's the most important thing to remember when it boils down to it, right? When it comes to developing a positive attitude to build a great company culture, what's the one thing, maybe if you could give us the one thing a middle manager needs to remember, a thing that the head guy or gal needs to remember, and also maybe the guys on the front line, those that are in the trenches doing what many would refer to as the grunt work, what do they need to remember in how they add to company culture?
Well, you know, I do an exercise with people, and it's common. I didn't create it or invent it myself, about their core values.
Kelly, you've cut out a bit. Yep. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
Oh, there you go. Sorry, okay. I couldn't hear you. Let's start over there.
Okay. I do an exercise, and I didn't create it. It's part of a psychotherapy exercise about core values, identifying what your personal core values are that affect your behavior in your personal and professional life. And everyone's going to have a different set of core values. They're neither right nor wrong. They just are the core values. But, of course, there's also the core value or the mission statement of the company. And, you know, it's important that everyone in the company, from the people doing, you know, at the front line, you know, like you said, the grunt work, to the middle manager, to the upper management, if everybody understands and values the mission of the company and the core values of the company, and then they bring them in line with their own personal core value. You know, like for me, when I did this exercise, I was surprised. My number one core value is wisdom. So everything that I do in professional and personal life is based on, is this a wise choice? Am I practicing wisdom? Somebody else's might be knowledge. Somebody else's might be love, you know, for example. So by continuously focusing on what your core value is, especially in the workplace, and then following the guideline of the company mission and the company's core values, then everybody will be in line, and that's how you're going to create that positive workforce. It's also, you know, kind of a matter of respect, you know, respectful.
Right. And it's really interesting that you say commit to making wise choices, that's the one thing that is a core value for you. I have a friend who travels quite a bit, and he will post stories on Facebook. Some of the listeners may know him, Mark Stelzner. And he posts stories about his travel and the funny things that he runs into. And he posted a picture yesterday of basically a notification billboard that's on the backside for the air traffic controllers and those that are on the ground helping planes come in and take off. And it was a board that said something along the lines of commit to making safe choices, right? Mm-hmm. And it seems like that should be something that every air traffic controller should do anyway, baggage handlers should do anyway, right? The yeah. folks that are working on the planes, they should be committing to that anyway, but that reminder was there. And it just kind of struck me as funny when, especially considering what you just stated, you know, having a place in your life where you can commit to wise choices or a smile or being kind, right? These things that should mm-hmm. be generally normal part of our character and how we go about our day, but maybe we do need to think about it on a regular basis and actually commit mm-hmm. to doing those things. When you yeah. think about business success, Kelly, and the folks that you've advised, consulted, do you have any examples of folks that you've worked with where they definitely showed an example of positivity that led to their business success? Does business success happen without being positive?
Well, sure. Business success can happen without being positive. You know, it's like in the negative, definitely, you know, people can, you know, stab other people in the back. You know, they say they climb the ladder of success. Don't worry about who you're stepping on. That's the negative
right.
aspect of it. And I guess you can be successful in that, but I would think that for a limited time, you would be successful. You know, some of the blogs and people that I follow is, you know, like Zig Ziglar, who's, you know, known. And, of course, you know, Tony Robbins, he's like, what, the father of positivity and motivation.
Right.
But, you know, you kind of look at like Richard Branson. He's got this positive spin on everything he does, no matter if he fails or not. He looks at it as, you know, a failure is a success, you know, waiting to happen.
Right.
But there are a lot of individuals that I work with in the, you know, in the media business that maintain a positive level of professionalism, and, you know, and I follow them. I constantly am calling upon them to for mentoring, or I mentor them. And they, you know, they help me gain insight, and then they ask for insight. They ask questions. They share ideas. You know, mostly they're in the world of media. But I also, you know, it's like I look at some of the clients that come into me, you know, come and see me for coaching. And, you know, just that simple shift in changing your attitude. You know, it's like, for example, if you wake up in the morning and you're like, oh, I have another day of work. I got to go to work, or I hate my job. Well, guess what? That sets the tone for your entire day. It's a lot of matters. It's just like, what is your attitude in the morning when you wake up? Okay, there's where we start. And yes, I have. Did you want names? You want me to give you some names of people
and what they've done, for example?
Yeah,
no.
Because I know there's several people, and I would call them entrepreneurs. I would call them, but they're constantly seeking more growth. And I think that's really the key, is always seeking more growth.
So how important is it when you consider being on the side of the person that does the hiring versus on the side of the person that is being hired to show positivity? A lot of people think, I don't want to show a negative side to myself, but I also don't want to be fake, right? I don't want to walk in as a Pollyanna. And I have made this mistake in the past of hiring somebody that appeared to be happier, more productive than they really were, right? So after they were on the front line or doing the job for a few weeks, I would say to myself, that's not the person that I hired, or that's not the person that interviewed. So how can you be positive without coming off as being fake?
Well, that is a excellent question. You know, authenticity, you know, in your personal life is so important. And you're talking about from talent acquisition. How can you maintain that positivity? Is that what you're saying?
Right. And how can you decipher as a hiring manager, you know, whether it's real or authentic, right? Or and how can you, is there a way to really have a conversation with an interviewee where you can really see what are they like, right? We always talk about employment branding, and is it the power behind the truth of employment branding, how it helps you to hire the right people for your organization if you're telling the truth. But when we consider, if you interview truthfully, right? So let's look at it from the other way. How can you interview powerfully, authentically, with transparency, right? I can say all of the buzzwords, right? But, but how can you show a truthful, positive you without coming off as being fake or phony?
Well, you know, I'm glad you asked this question. I'm going to kind of circle back to my experience as a psychotherapist instead of as a consultant or as a person who does interviewing. As a psychotherapist, you know, we're trained that we never disclose anything about ourselves because it's the hour belongs to our client, right? But occasionally what I find is that a story or an event that has happened to me personally, if it's relatable to the person that I'm working with, I'll disclose it because it helps create a bond, and it also shares a personal experience that creates a sense of me being authentic. This is truly who I am. This happened. This is what happened to me. And, you know, not going into full details of where everything was going on, but it provides a part of a bond where it's like, I was true to you. So, you know, like, for example, you know, it's like in the career world, if I talk about a failure, something that I failed at, when somebody's talking about their work environment or a boundary that I needed to set with an employer that they haven't quite been able to achieve yet, you can actually share realistically the truth about it. And I think that when hiring managers or anybody that's doing hiring doesn't allow themselves to just be a real human being and say, well, tell me about an experience where you were failing and you turned it around. You know, you ask a question like that, it's like this person's all of a sudden like, I have no idea, you know, and they're just thinking, and you're sitting there, you're staring at them like, okay, give me an answer. And I've been in this, I've been on that other side of the desk where it's like you're trying to like fish through your memories of like, when did I have a failure that I turned it around? I don't know. I wasn't expecting this question. Well, as an interviewer, I would say, well, let me use myself as an example. And I think that that would really make you human, make you authentic, and it would also give you some really great insight into that person, how they listen to you tell their story. Then all of a sudden they'll be like, oh, okay, well, here's my story. You know, it'll be more of a conversation as opposed to an interrogation.
Right, and that seems to be what is needed, a welcome shift in interviewing today. We always talk about interviewing for fit. The performance review interview, and how can we do this so that we're bringing the right person? We need the person with the right skills, obviously, but we also need the person that's going to fit within the organization and make a difference and grow and change. Whenever we hire somebody new, we're wanting to bring somebody in to make a positive difference, not a negative difference. So it's important for the job seeker, the interviewee, to have in the forefront of their minds that, hey, this process, this interviewing process is just as much for me as it is for them. And I try to remind folks that I know that are going in for interviews, ask questions. Never get to the end of an interview where you have not asked a question yourself as the interviewee. So I think that's really valid advice. And I know that we took a road off there a little bit, Kelly, and I appreciate you helping me out there. No, I appreciate it. When you consider your own future, Kelly, you yourself, Kelly Orchard, as a therapist, as an advisor, as a consultant to your client organizations, the individuals also that you work with, what are the three things that you do? If you could give us three key things, this is one of my favorite questions to ask my guests, that help you to retain your future individual. How do you make them feel like you care about them and you're the more consultants struggle with this? So I like to highlight your own practice.
Well, I talk to people and I ask a lot of questions. I genuinely, I did one of these like StrengthsFinder quizzes. You know what I'm talking about? And my number one strength was learner. I'm a learner. So for me, I seek knowledge everywhere I go. I'm like a sponge. It's like, tell me more. I don't feel I have to retain all of it. You know, it's impossible. But I'm always seeking knowledge. I'm always talking to people and asking questions. But I practice wisdom. And I think that those are the top three keys that I do, things that I do to constantly, you know, as I consider my own future, you know, because it's like it's constantly evolving. I'm never the same. I'm always changing. And part of it is because I learn something new all the time from somebody else. Even my clients who come to me for help, I learn something from them always, you know. And even my interactions with you, I learn stuff from you all the time, you know. And so that's what it is. It's like always be willing to learn something new. Don't think you know it all.
That's really a brilliant thing you just said. Don't think
what,
that you
that
know
I guess
it
that
all.
I learned from you? Yeah.
But don't think that you know it all. We can become so stubborn as business professionals, as HR professionals, as a recruiter, as somebody who offers advice to others, that we know everything we need to know. I've actually spoken to several different people who have said, look, I'm successful the way that I am. I don't need to grow. I don't need to ignite any new development or evolution within myself personally. So how do you keep that spark? How do you, Kelly, personally keep the spark of wanting to continue to be a learner?
Well, here's my philosophy, and, you know, it's like part of my brand is because my last name is Orchard, I promote personal and professional growth. And here's the thing. If you're not growing, what's the opposite of growing?
Death. Or shriveling or dying, yeah.
Right. So if you're not growing, you're dying. So I would, you know, so I always say be eager to learn and grow, you know, because it's the opposite of death. And, you know, so I always go back to, what are your core values? Know them and practice them. And, you know, not only be willing and eager to learn more, but become a sponge. You know, try things. Don't be afraid to fail. Gosh, I think I fail at something almost every single day. But I'm willing to dust myself off, pick myself up, and say, okay, we're going to try this again, you know. And,
you know, and we may not even know. There may be times we don't even know we're failing. An interaction at the grocery store, or we finish a call with somebody that we think really appreciates us, and they get off that call and just say, wow, what a pompous beep bleep to bleep, you know. That person is not helping me. How can I get out of this relationship? I think that about people. So why wouldn't people think that about me, right?
Yeah, and the reality is that, or the perspective is that I would say to a client, well, that's their issue. It's not your issue, you know?
Right.
So if that person gets off the phone with you and they felt that you didn't help them, well, they weren't open to whatever you were offering. So they closed off right away. So just make the next call. Somebody else will want what you have.
Right. And it could also be that you were offering something to benefit you and not the individual that you're speaking with. So it's all about perspective, right? It's so many times I remind my own children, look, perception is reality. You may think that this is what's going on, and it may be what's going on for you, but that's not what's going on for the other person. So always try and keep an open mind. Always consider opportunities for growth in everything that you're doing every day, right? And I have a son that's going through college application processes and applying for scholarships and all these different things and avenues that will benefit his future. And it gets frustrating because it's hard to know that not everybody sees how great you are, right? It's hard to know that, you mean I have to write these things down? You mean I have to say why they should want me to come to their school, right? Why I should consider this major for my continuing education. That's all part of growing up too, and recognizing that, look, I need continual growth. I need continual evolution, and I'm asking for help from other people.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons I engaged with you, Kelly, years ago was, hey, I saw what you were saying. I was interested in what you were saying and thought I could benefit from this. And I think if we're more open about that, I think that if we take the time to thank somebody, the gratitude journal, let's go back to we're going to wrap right around back to the beginning and be thankful for the wisdom that comes from those around us. We will definitely be in a position to change and grow and become better at who we are. You know, you talk about wisdom. One of my things is about learning, but it's also about enriching and doing it better. My vision statement, if you will, for the last 7 years has been, there is a better way to do everything. There is a better, more efficient way to do my job. There is a better, more efficient way for me to be a mother, for me to be a wife, for me to have this ongoing growth within me. How can I do it better? What can I do differently? And sometimes we have to look outside and ask those people in our life, how could I have done that better? And pride gets in the way, boy, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It definitely does. And I'm guilty of that too. You know, it's like I call somebody that I would consider a mentor, and pretty soon we're mentoring each other. And it's being open and willing to accept that you don't know everything. You can't possibly know everything. So be willing and open to, you know, just kind of like open up that book and say, okay, teach me more, you know, teach me something new. And I love your philosophy about, you know, how can I improve? How can I, you know, do better? You know, it's like, here's a statement. It's like, if you improve just 1% every day, percent of what you do every day, just think of where you'll be a year from now. 365% plus the exponential growth that you experience by 1% improvement each and every day. And that's in just pick one top, you know, one thing. I thought it's like, well, if you want to lose weight, just improve on your diet 1% a day. If it's your knowledge, then read something new 1% every day, you know. It just a little incremental, but in a year you'll be so much wiser and smarter.
I love that. That's a great way to look at it. Some people look at change or development as daunting, but if you look at it as incremental, then you can sit back and say, I can do this. I can really do this. It's a great way to look at it. So we have a run out of time, unbelievably. It always happens so quickly for me. Any last words of wisdom?
Last words of wisdom. Just, you know, basically just be eager to learn and grow. try new things. Don't be afraid to fail because everybody has failed in their life. So just join the club.
I love that. Don't be afraid to fail. And now we have come to my favorite part of the show, Kelly. This is, I always call it my selfish part. This is where I get to ask my guest a list of quick hit favorites. So what's your favorite food?
I eat healthy. So I think that apples, it's crazy, I know, but apples are my favorite food. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense coming from an orchard. So
I know, right?
Let's see. And your favorite place. Where's your favorite place? I missed a book. What's your favorite book? Your favorite book. It could be something you're reading now.
Honestly, it's my journals because my journals show my personal growth. And as I think about that question, it's like those are my favorite books. I have a bookshelf full of stuff. And I'm like, which one is it? Oh, it's my thesaurus because I like new words. But no, it's like I love my journals. They tell my story and they help me keep notes. Yeah. Yeah.
That's great. And then now your favorite place. This could be a room in your home. It could be a park close by. What's your favorite place on earth?
My big leather chair because it's where I write and I have my coffee. Yeah. Yeah.
Good. Well, and it's fitting for us to be on HR Latte to talk about your coffee. I'm gonna have a big brimming cup as soon as we get off here. But but not least, what is your favorite thing to do? I think I know the answer based on your other answers.
Oh, is it writing? Creating my passion projects. But you know what? It's also spending time with my grandbabies. That's my favorite thing to do right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I always put that on my calendar. Grandbaby
that
time.
Matters.
Yeah.
Well, Kelly, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks so much, everybody. Thanks for listening in. Next week, I'll be kicking off my series on diversity in the workplace. Should be interesting given the state that our country, our world is in right now. So thanks again, Kelly.
Thanks for having me. Loved it.
It was great.